as a coach, your players are never where you want them to be at this point during the course of spring ball. But I do really like, you know, what that, where that room is trending.
Josh Heupel joins the show today. Can't wait to visit with the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. It's a great Thursday edition of Always College Football. Welcome in. It's April 11th. We are in the heat of the spring season. The portal's starting to open too. We'll get to some of the guys that have entered here in the next few days, but today is about the spring games coming up this weekend. We have so many teams taking the field. I counted 19 teams that'll be on the field in the Power Five this weekend. So we will give you a preview to every single one of those teams. Just something to watch for. Not a deep dive, but just something to watch for, something I'm hoping to see, something that was an issue last year that hopefully is not going to be an issue this year. I really think spring football is still important. I know some people don't think it's as important as it once was. Man, I am a believer in the progress that was made in spring can carry over to the summer, which will ultimately carry over into fall camp and will lead you with some momentum into the season. So I love spring games. I think you can take something from them. Do we overreact to them? Probably. But then again, it is football and it is April. So why not overreact just a little bit? We have a great show lined up for you, though, with Josh Heupel as well. Please like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. We always appreciate you guys from wherever it is you're downloading the podcast from, and we know it's all over the world. Please continue to rate. Please continue to subscribe. Write us a review on Apple Podcasts. That'd be awesome as well. We so appreciate all of you that come to us on a weekly basis. The numbers continue to grow, and we want to continue to serve you with good quality college football content on a weekly basis. So without much further ado, let's dive in. He's the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers, Josh Heupel. We welcome him in. He's the head coach on Rocky Top, the head coach of the Volunteers. He's Josh Heupel, former national championship winning quarterback. Coach, what's going on, my friend?
Man, mid-spring ball, nothing better. It's been a lot of fun, and looking forward to the spring game next week.
Year four. Does it not fly? I feel like we just had this conversation. I was talking to Gus Malzahn the other day. He's like, he's been at UCF forever. You've been at Tennessee forever. I mean, it's like you blink your eyes, and next thing you know, you're in year four. So does it feel like you've been as long as you have?
Days are long. The years go extremely quickly. And now more than ever inside of college football, it's been a lot of fun here the first 3 years. Proud of what we've built, but I really can't believe how quickly it's gone.
It's pretty amazing, and you guys have had some great moments and things to be real thrilled about. This spring is one in which you're breaking in a quarterback that we're also interested in. You're breaking in some new pieces defensively. You have a couple new faces on the coaching staff. So if you had to kind of sum up the offseason, kind of helped you get to this point, how would you sum it up?
Man, it's been a great offseason. I love the additions that we have on the coaching staff. You know, Coach Inge, his experience, you know, his body of work, who he is as a person, his ability to relate to players. It's been a great transition inside the linebacker room and our defense staff. And Coach Sims coming in at the running back position, it's been a seamless one. He's got a good young group inside of that room, but he's a great teacher and really like what those guys have done so far this spring.
Is there a better person in the world than William Inge? He's the best guy ever.
I was
so fired up when I saw he landed with you guys because I wasn't sure where he was going to go. You know, there was buzz that he might stay at Washington, might go to Tuscaloosa. When I found out he was up there with you guys, I thought, what a great fit. And I know he's going to add a lot of leadership to that side of the ball for you guys. But when you think about as you kind of attacked this offseason and looking at the progress that was made last year, and while offensively I know there were some peaks and valleys, but defensively It did feel like there were some strides taken. So let's start on that side of the ball. Yeah. How would you characterize the advancements you guys made on that side throughout 23?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take you all the way back to when we first got here. Coach Banks, his leadership, what he's done on the defensive side of the ball. We've been able to continue to build each and every year. You mentioned our growth last year. You look statistically, there's so many numbers that we're at the top of the league or near the top. With everything, when we first got our feet on the ground here, the number of guys that had departed the program before I was hired, you know, the depth, the athleticism, the length. We've continued to add to that every single year. How diverse and multiple he is on the defensive side, his ability to put that in a teaching pattern where our guys can grasp it has allowed us to continue to grow and really like what they've done during the course of this spring, playing with great energy, passion, running around, flying to the football, fundamentally continuing to grow. The experience that we have up front, some of the new pieces that we have in the secondary, the athleticism, the traits that they have, I feel like we're really in a position to take another step this year. And Tim's been a massive part of that.
It was pretty wild to see some of the turnover in the secondary, but it wasn't limited to what you guys are dealing with. I mean, I don't know if that's like the outside of the quarterback, secondary might be the most popular portal position, it feels like, because those guys are on the move like crazy. And you do have quite a bit of turnover there. So as you kind of looked at that position group heading into the spring, are you satisfied with how you've kind of fortified those spots and the competitions that you have going on at some of those spots?
Yeah, absolutely. Even before some of those things happened, that was an area that we knew just with the bodies in the room that we needed to address. And through high school recruiting, through the portal, I feel like we've done a really nice job of, you know, continuing to add pieces that have the traits that we need to be successful back there in the secondary. And what they've done here through the course of spring ball, they've done a fantastic job. We've stayed healthy. They've gotten a bunch of reps. And in some ways, the depth of our wide receiver room has helped just in the competition of what they're able to see on a daily basis during the course of our good-on-good work in spring ball.
There's a lot of buzz about Ricky Gibson and a couple guys that are having some nice springs that might be even, I'll let you kind of sum it up. If they're ahead of schedule, if they're where you want them to be, but he's a name that I keep hearing, and I know there's probably a few others that you're excited about as well. So who are some names we should be paying attention to when you guys tee it up in the spring game a week from now?
Yeah. As a coach, your players are never where you want them to be at this point during the course of spring ball. But I do really like, where that room is trending. And we have competition inside of the room, and they've been highly competitive out on the practice field. And for us, Ricky Gibson's a guy that you mentioned. Got time throughout the course of last year, special teams, and started playing a lot more football in the middle to back part of the season, starting the bowl game. He's continued to grow in his understanding of the game, has all the physical traits as far as athleticism, patience and coverage, ability to play 50-50 balls. Jermon McCoy, transfer that we added, has done an unbelievable job of just, fitting into the team culture, but grasping what we're doing schematically on the field and got a great ceiling in front of him as well. So there's a bunch of other guys that we really like back there as well and excited to see for us, as we finish spring ball, but also then the growth throughout the course of the summer and where those guys get to before we get into training camp.
And I know the safety spot is one that is very much in the forefront of a lot of your fans' mind too. And with Jordan Thomas and Matthews and some of those guys kind of competing at those spots, you mentioned McCoy and Ricky on the corners, but at safety, how are you kind of rolling those guys? And how early do you anticipate kind of having an answer as to what the pecking order might be there?
Yeah, we got great competition at those spots. And there's some young guys that, played extremely well the last few weeks of the season and into the bowl game. Jordan Thomas is a great example of that guy that played at the star position for us. We added Jacoby Thomas at safety. He's done an unbelievable job for us. I really like that group. They're smart. They're competitive in the meeting room. They help each other out. And I feel like just athletically, the movement skills of those guys, the ability to play in space in coverage, but then also tackle in coverage, we continue to upgrade our roster.
Yeah, well, I know the best thing that'll help that secondary as they maybe get their feet wet, it's at the highest possible level of football, is the pass rush. We know one guy in particular that will wreck games. Outside of James Pierce, I know you have some competition going on the other side, and I'm just curious, how do you anticipate, James is going to get a lot of attention. I don't know how any offensive coordinator that goes into a game is like, all right, that guy right there, he's getting chipped, he's getting tagged. We're going to put an extra lineman over there. We'll put an extra tight end over there. He's got to play through some traffic, but the other side's going to get some free runs, I would think, as a result of James's presence. So how's that other side developing, and who are some guys that might be stepping up there?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why you got to have a good buddy inside your meeting room that is ready to play at championship level too. And, just at the on the edges, I really like the growth. We're extremely long, athletic, ability to bend, affect the quarterback. Josh Josephs, was going into year three, played a bunch of football for us. He's the best that he's been inside of our program, and has had a great spring. Caleb Herring, young guy that's continuing to develop off the edge. Tyree West, Don Bailey, those guys continue to climb in who they are and their understanding and ability to play at a high level. And, I think the depth and experience that we have across the front four, but even the guys inside, you got to be able to affect them in there as well. I really like the development of that group. Coach Garner, Coach Eckler have done a great job of them.
And it'll be, I think, since we know there are some known commodities on the deep side, it's going to give you a great look as to maybe, like, everyone wants to talk about Nico. We'll get there. All right. Okay, so we'll get to
I didn't
Nico.
Think I would get through this one without that.
No, we're not going to let you off the hook that easy, Coach. We'll get into the weeds with Nico, but we've already seen enough of him to have a good grasp. What we haven't seen, though, is how things are going to shake themselves up on the offensive line. And like I know you're not great playing quarterback from your backside. So how is that group progressing against the pass rush that they're seeing every day, which should be one of the top groups in the SEC?
Yeah, really deep on the defensive line. That helps us during the course of practice right now. Some of the injuries that we had on the back quarter of the season last year, those guys have been limited in their opportunities to go through spring ball, but really like the growth of that group. Got great leadership with Coop Mays in the middle of the football field. His ability to command everything within our tempo, get everybody on the same page, physically has continued to develop as well. John Campbell continues to do a great job. Lance Hurd, transfer tackle, has done a really nice job fitting into the program, being accountable every day, and then just continues to climb throughout the course of spring ball. And got a lot of young guys that are inside of our program because some of the injuries to the guys got a lot of experience. They're getting thrown into to the meat and potatoes of it and growing a lot during the course of spring ball. So continued development and competition up there is only going to make us better.
When you look at just your scheme and the tempo that you play with and how that can occasionally give the offensive line a pretty significant advantage. I mean, the defense is gassed. I mean, those guys they can't bring the same heat that they might be able to bring. I think that's a great neutralizer for you guys. So in spring, do you adjust that a little bit, or do you still maintain the tempo that we see in the fall?
Yeah, we actually, anytime we're practicing with our defense, we bring balance to what we're doing within the course of every practice, really. So there's slowed down periods where it's alignment, assignment, technique, a bunch of motions, shifts and trades from us so that defense is seeing some of the things that they're going to see during the course of the season, allow those guys to develop in the way that they need to as well. And then during the course of practice, there'll be, a period or so where we will work on our tempo too. So we try to bring balance to what we're doing within the scope of our practice.
Is it more difficult to evaluate offensive linemen when you run the scheme that you run? Because sometimes, the guy they're going against can't put their best foot forward in one-on-ones, is that ever geared to help the offensive line? I don't know if it is. So is it sometimes?
definitely not. No, it's not. The athleticism, the traits that you need, you got to be able to protect elite pass rushers in this league off of the edge. Yeah. You look at all the pull schemes that we run, showcasing their athleticism. And I think that's one of the great reasons why, Darnell Wright goes in the top 10 year ago in the NFL draft.
He had some really nice games too.
A bunch of them have. Sometimes people just think within a tempo offense, it's straight drop back throwing the ball around. If you look at us, the balance that we've had, the ability to run the football has been a huge part of our success historically.
Don't tell people the secrets, Coach. I mean, everyone thinks you just drop back and throw it around and you're 7-on-7 on grass.
Yeah,
don't tell
people that you run the football. I wish they did just think that.
If they do think that, they're going to find out. I can promise you that. They will find out very quickly. All right, we're into it a little bit now. I do have to ask you about Nico Iamaleava. All right, I feel like I've worked on that a lot.
You did a really nice job there.
I literally, repetitions is key. Like, you should have seen me before I called a Clemson game when DJ Uiagalelei was starting for the first time, and we had to call that game. So I had to practice. But Joe Tessitore and I bounced them off of each other. But Nico Iamaleava, and it's taken reps, but I'm there. Loved what he did in the game against Iowa. There was a lot to like. He's a lot more athletic than I anticipated. You know, a guy that's big and long, I'm thinking he's a strider, you know, but he's got some twitch. So let's start with that game first. What did you learn about him in that performance?
Yeah, great command, poise. If anything, he slowed down during the course of the game than maybe even during the course of practice, which you and I both know is typically not the case for a young quarterback. You know, handle the adversity, good play, bad play, the right way. We knew he was athletic and had the ability to escape and make plays with his feet. He's done an unbelievable job here during the course of this offseason. Been a pro in the building, continuing to grow so much just in understanding defenses, you know, why we're doing the things that we're doing, and you know, where to place his eyes and get himself in a great fundamental position to read things out and then deliver the football, and continues to grow in his command inside of our building. He's always done a great job one-on-one, you know, grabbing a wide out after a rep. He's doing that with the offensive line and now starting to push the leadership role, which inevitably, when you have the ball in your hands, you need to have that for the locker room and a football team to operate the right way. That's going to be a growth for him during the course of this year and during his career. You and I both know that you don't just step into that as a young guy, but he's done a really nice job.
When you're that naturally gifted, I wouldn't know what that's like.
I certainly don't either.
You might, though. I don't know. I mean, probably closer than not. When you're that naturally gifted, though, and you as a coach and as a quarterback coach are trying to develop him, do you ever put him in a position that would make him really uncomfortable? Like, hey, dude, you can't leave the pocket here. Like, you are throwing this from the pocket. No matter what, come hell or high water, make it work from the pocket. How do you handle a guy with that natural ability and their progress? Because some of what he does is something that you just can't coach, but you want to develop the other skills that are more routine so he can stay in structure and stay on schedule.
Yeah, we don't hold him back during the course of practice from feeling the pocket, seeing things, and making plays as he sees them and process them. With young quarterbacks and all quarterbacks, it's about, you know, a pre-snap, you know, idea of what you're anticipating, post-snap decisions, getting his feet in the right spot and to be in a fundamental position. That's when the pocket's clean. It's when it's not, the pocket movement part of it. And, you know, he's continued to grow in that way. He's got great command. He pushes every single day to have a deeper understanding. He's detailed in the meeting room, takes great notes. He's continued to grow in, you know, just how he approaches being an elite quarterback day in and day out. And really love the growth that we've seen. One of the great traits that a lot of guys won't see if you're just watching him on TV is his ability to process information over the middle of the football field. He's got a great understanding of bodies and movement and windows that are opening up. He's a great anticipating thrower. And, you know, just really proud of what he's done up until this point in the offseason. Obviously, we need him to have great urgency here as we get to the back half of spring ball, but really through the summer to put himself in a position to go play the way that that we need him to.
I know I, along with a million Vols fans and really the college football world, is fascinated by his progress. And I know we can't wait to see him here in the spring game coming up in a few days. So you can't play quarterback by yourself. I know you have crazy competition at wide receiver, a couple of newcomers in Brazil from Tulane, a couple of freshmen that I know you have real high expectations for, whether it's this year or some point in the future. So as you're looking at kind of the pecking order at that position, How deep do you want that group to go to where those guys can sub in and there won't be much drop off from 1 to 4, 1 to 5, 1 to 6, what have you?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to play as many guys as you can, as long as they're going to play at the level that you need them to. Without a doubt, the deepest that we've been at the wide receiver point in our tenure here at Tennessee, and those guys handle it the right way. They're highly competitive. They've made a bunch of plays throughout the course of spring ball. The young guys that you mentioned love their physical traits. They have a good understanding of what we're doing. They got to continue to grow in it, which is typical of anybody that comes into any offensive system. But they all have playmaking ability. Some of the guys that have experience really like the growth of a Caleb Webb, Chaz Nimrod. Dante Thornton's had a great spring. And so, you know, you're looking at a group that, you know, Brew's not on the field with us yet. He's doing great in his rehab process. He's been a great coach on the field with us this spring. And so it's a group that has an ability to impact the game. And, you know, the depth of it is going to give us the opportunity to play more guys than we have.
And one other guy I was really fired up about when I saw that you brought him in is Holden Stays. Underutilized a little bit, but we did the NC State game last year, and he just took over the game. Tight end, fullback, H-back. Like, he can run. And I know you guys have had pieces at that position before, but he might be probably as good of a receiving threat as you've maybe had as a traditional – he could play hand-in-the-dirt tight end. So what kind of role do you anticipate him having this fall?
Yeah, I expect Holden to play a bunch of football. We're deeper at the tight end position than we have been, too, in our growth as a program. So Holden's done a great job this spring. He's played football. He's got experience. He's really calm and mature. He's grasped onto what we're doing offensively. We place a lot on our tight ends within the scope of our offense, and he's done a great job. Miles Kitzelman has had a great spring as well, and a young guy, Ethan Davis, that really had his first offseason in maybe 2 years because of some of the injuries that he had during the course of his high school career and when he first got here. He's just done an unbelievable job, too. So I love the growth of that group under Coach Ablin's leadership, and expect all those guys to play a lot of football for us in the fall.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing that. Coach, lastly, we'll get you out of here with this. You guys will be in Destin a month from now or so for SEC spring meetings. There will be the 14 coaches that you're familiar with, and then there'll be two new ones. One in Steve Sarkisian, who I'm sure you know, and then the other, Brent Venables, a guy that you actually played under at Oklahoma. Yeah. Do you anticipate maybe some rookie hazing for the new guys in the room for Sark and Coach Venables as they are, you know, making themselves at home there at the SEC spring meetings?
Those guys are experienced enough, probably no rookie hazing for those guys down in Destin, and already had an opportunity to rub elbows with both of those guys. We had a previous meeting in Birmingham and you know, welcomed those guys to the league.
Well, anybody throw any jabs at him, you think? We think Lane will go after him a little bit or something? Like, somebody's going to gas him up a little bit like Spurrier used to back in the day.
Whether it's at the new guys or not, there's always going to be some jabs thrown inside that room.
I would imagine. So, Coach Heupel, terrific stuff, man. Spring number 4, season number 4 coming up. We are so excited to see your team and look forward to watching you guys in your spring game a few days from now.
Hey, always appreciate it. And GBO.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Great visit with Josh Heupel there, but now it's time to look ahead at some of the teams that will take the field on Saturday and a thing or two I want to watch from some of these teams. We'll start with the Ohio State Buckeyes. I can't wait to see the running back tandem of Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. The two combined to rush for over 2,000 yards last year, and Judkins actually ranked second among FBS players both in rushing yards and touchdowns since he debuted in 2022. He's unbelievable. And the fact that the Buckeyes were able to land him and Caleb Downs is absurd. I'm also really curious to look at what's coming up at wide receiver. Jeremiah Smith in particular, the number two wide receiver, the number four overall player in ESPN's top 300. I'll be curious to see if he can step right in alongside Emeka Igbuka, who is probably going to be their top target going into the season. But can the freshman get some playing time and become the next great one for the Buckeyes? Also very interested in the defense. We know that last year they were among the best in the sport. They were ranked top three in both scoring and total defense. So I just want to see some of the guys that we've seen play a lot already. 10 of their 14 players who played at least 300 snaps last year are back, including JT Tolumolau, Denzel Burke. You also add Caleb Downs. On the recruiting trail, you brought in a couple of top-tier corners, both from the state of Ohio, Aaron Scott and Bryce West. So a lot to look forward to when the Buckeyes take the field here for their spring game. Penn State is also going to be on the field. And if you look last year at Penn State's defense, they were incredible. Incredible. Third highest ranked defense, according to ESPN analytics, which is pretty remarkable. Third fewest points per game. They gave up less than two touchdowns a game, trailed only Michigan and Ohio State, and number one in total defense in terms of yards allowed last year, and second in opponent yards per game. So no team was able to play quite as good defensively as Penn State was from start to finish. So it'll be very interesting in seeing how they do. They also did a great job in creating sacks last year, 49 created, and they were one of the best as far as sack rate last year. Of course, I'll be watching the offense. Can the run game get going? Andy Kotelnicki, new offensive coordinator. Those are things that we'll all be watching, but I will be watching the defense, some of the new faces that will be stepping in to very important roles. In the ACC, Boston College will be on the field. It's the start of the Bill O'Brien era. He returns to his home state to become BC's new head coach. He replaced Jeff Hafley, obviously, who left to become the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers. O'Brien has been at the college level before. He was 15-9 in the 2 years that he was at Penn State as their head coach in 2012 and 2013, but then ultimately went to the Houston Texans where he went 52-48 over 6 years as their head coach. He's been the offensive coordinator at Duke in the past, has been the offensive coordinator at Georgia Tech, at Alabama, at New England, was there for a moment at Ohio State, so they'll be interested in watching that. They also bring back a lot of players. Bring back their leading passer, their leading rushers, and their leading receiver, including Thomas Castellanos, who established himself as one of the best dual-threat quarterbacks in the country. He was the fifth ACC quarterback since 1996 to record at least 2,000 passing yards and 1,000 rushing yards in the season. So it'll be great to see him and his development with Bill O'Brien, who is an excellent quarterback developer. At Georgia Tech, it'll be very interesting to look at Georgia Tech this year. I think they are extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. Are they good enough to challenge in the ACC, win the ACC? I don't know about that, but I know they bring a lot of guys back. They return 83% of their offense from a year ago. That's the seventh highest percentage in the FBS. And you take into account that that group led the ACC in rushing with 204 yards per game. Pretty dang impressive. Haynes King is back. Their top two leading rushers, Jamal Haynes and Haynes King, are both back. And three of their top four receivers, including Eric Singleton, Malik Rutherford, and Christian Leary, all return as well. You also are going to look on the defensive side, and there's a bunch of guys that are going to be replaced. They only bring back 49% of their productivity. Not very good, but the good news is they weren't very good last year either. They really struggled defensively, so hopefully that group collectively can do a better job. Brent Key and his staff have really attacked the portal, gone hard on the defensive side, brought in three defensive linemen, and have really tried to hone in and get bigger and stronger and more physical there in the trenches so they can hold up a little better down the stretch in the ACC. At Pittsburgh, it's the Nate Yarnell era. Slated to take over at quarterback. Could be a huge upgrade for them. Started the final two games for the Panthers last year. Played pretty well, much better than the previous two that played. Christian Valier and Phil Jurkovic. So hopefully Yarnell is going to be in a pretty good spot. Ferdl Jurkovic last year really struggled. 33 QBR posted in his five starts before being benched for Veyer. But I think if you look at Yarnell, there's only one direction to go, and that's up for Pittsburgh as it relates to the quarterback position. At Virginia Tech, nobody brings back more production in the country than the Hokies. They also bring back pretty much everybody along their coaching staff, which is pretty significant. Coaching continuity is great, especially when you know you have a quarterback like Kyren Drones leading the offense, who's established himself as a guy that really can do a great job with the ball in his hands. Now, he did take some sacks, but he did run for nearly 1,000 yards. He actually had the sixth most rushing yards among FBS quarterbacks last year, and he scored five times on the ground. So I think he's going to be pretty excited about the return of Ollie Jennings, who missed most of last year with an ankle injury. I think those two guys together could be in a really good spot. Now, Jennings got hurt, but in the season opener against ODU before he was hurt in the second game of the year, had five catches, 72 yards, and a couple touchdowns. So now he brings back Ollie Jennings alongside Drones. That could be an offense that is very difficult to contain. The Miami Hurricanes, they're finding another quarterback as well. Tyler Van Dyke is off to Wisconsin, likely going to be the starting quarterback up there. But right now, at the moment, it's a three-way quarterback battle. Do I think this battle will continue? Probably not. Cam Ward was brought in from Washington State, entered the portal, thought about going to the draft, ultimately decided to choose the Hurricanes over Florida State, which led Florida State to go after DJ Uiagalelei, who they might have preferred in the beginning, but they were certainly in the Cam Ward sweepstakes, at least for a little bit. But there's a three-way quarterback battle between Emery Williams, who started a couple games last year, got hurt horribly against Florida State, but he's back to compete for the starting job. The staff loves him and loves his future. Cam Ward, we've seen what he's been able to do at the college level. And then Reese Poffenbarger, who came to Miami in the portal after a couple great years at Albany. Now, the guy that you probably know, Cam Ward, yeah, he's great. We know that. He's gone for over 7,000 total yards and responsible for 61 touchdowns in his time at Pullman. The guy you don't know is Reese Poffenbarger. And what you need to know about him is that he was one of the most prolific passers in the FCS last year. Led in passing yards and passing touchdowns last year, but he did have some turnovers. He had 13 interceptions in 15 games. So if there's one thing we learned about Miami, the fastest way to the bench for Mario Cristobal is by turning the football over. I expect Cam Ward to be the guy, but I will be interested in seeing how the other two handle it when they take to the field here in spring, summer, and then ultimately in fall camp. In the Big 12, a couple of the teams getting underway. Cincinnati has a first-year defensive coordinator in Tyson Veit, comes over to the Bearcats after a long stint in the Big 12 at Iowa State, and he's stepping into a situation that is desperately in need of change. The good news is the defensive backfield was the biggest issue. They were pretty good in the front seven, but the defensive backfield was a big problem. So they're going to adjust to a more 3-3-5 defense like we saw at Iowa State the last couple of years, and that will take some of the pressure off the back end while they try to find who is going to fill those five defensive back spots. The team that I think is the team to beat, at least as of right now, are the Utah Utes. They're in the Big 12 as well now. I know, wrap your head around that. Still weird for me too. They lost their starting quarterback the entire year, and that's almost impossible for pretty much anyone to get over. They still managed to go 8-5. They still managed to get into the top 10 at one point last year. But the reason why they were so good is they were dominant on the defensive side of the football from time to time. They were one of 20 teams in the FBS to allow less than 20 points per game last year, and that ranked them 19th, actually, in the FBS. The only problem is they didn't force very many turnovers. They forced just 15 last year. That was T100, or as we like to call triple dig. Anytime you're triple dig in the rankings, never good. The most impressive part, though, is that they were able to really control the game. Now you bring back Cam Rising. You got to replace a couple pieces, lost a couple dudes in the portal, got to replace a couple safeties that were elite. But I'm very optimistic about what Utah will be on both sides of the ball this year, knowing that Cam Rising is back and knowing that the defense and the culture that's been established there under Kyle Whittingham, you know, that's not going anywhere. Into the SEC. The Alabama Crimson Tide will be on the field. I'll be on the call. Looking forward to being in Tuscaloosa Saturday, 3 o'clock Central Time on ESPN. Jalen Milroe returns, but it will be a different type of offense. Now, the SEC we always kind of lose our mind about the SEC in spring games. This spring game will be structured a little differently. It'll be more of a scrimmage setting. So it'll be ones against ones, but I don't know if we're going to see true move the ball game-like situations. But Jalen Milroe did a great job last year. A great job. Got better and better and better down the stretch. Took a bunch of sacks early, but started to play faster. Started to play more instinctive. Started to play more decisive down the stretch. He steps into a very quarterback-friendly offense. It puts a lot on his shoulders. But at the same time, they do have the element of the quarterback run. Probably not going to see that in the spring game, but I'm curious to see how Jalen Milroe has developed as a passer. He was pretty good last year on the downfield accuracy. The underneath stuff is still a little bit of a work in progress. How has he progressed there? I mean, he was still just one of eight players last year with 20 passing touchdowns and 10 rushing touchdowns, and one of just two in the SEC alongside Jaden Daniels. So clearly did an amazing job. Also curious to see with Alabama, a different defense. Now, a lot of people, we say the numbers, you know, 3-3-5, 4-3, you know, 3-4, 4-2-5. We hear all the numbers, and Alabama for a long time has really substituted defensively based on the offense's personnel. What we've seen the last handful of years, probably the last 10 or so, most teams are running some variation of three wide receivers, one tight end, and a running back. It's called 11 personnel. We know that that is going to lead Alabama under Nick Saban to play a 4-2-5. Four defensive linemen, two linebackers, five defensive backs, with that nickel being the star position that is kind of a hybrid player that can play in the box, but will play more really as kind of your hybrid linebacker, safety, corner, guy that can cover, can do a lot of things for you, usually probably your best pound-for-pound football player defensively. So this defense, while they will maintain the structure of 4-2-5 under Kane Womack, they will run a lot more zone. They actually don't call it zone. They call it vision defense. And when I say vision defense, it means eyes are in the backfield on the quarterback. Under Nick Saban's scheme, they ran what you call a pattern match scheme, which is basically man, but different guys are responsible for different parts of the field. It's basically a hybrid between man and zone. This defense, well, they still will occasionally handle man coverage and use man coverage, more eyes defensively will be on the quarterback, so they'll see the ball released, which hopefully for the Tide will lead to more turnovers, more interceptions, more batted balls, and more big plays defensively. So I'm really interested to see the structure of the defense and just how much zone they're playing relative to the man they've played under Nick Saban and the previous regime. At Arkansas, we know what's been the story for Arkansas. They posted 9 wins in Sam Pittman's second season. That was back in 2021. But it's been a little while since then. They went 1-7 in conference play last year and have gone just 4-12 in conference play over the last two seasons. Only Vanderbilt, who went 2-14, has a worse record in conference play over that span amongst SEC teams. Now, they had trouble really on both sides of the ball. They scored a touchdown just 14% of their offensive drives. It's the second worst rate in the SEC. Mississippi State was worst, and they allowed 32 points per game in the league, which ranked 11th. What we're really interested in is who's the quarterback? Is it going to be Jacoby Criswell, who's been there for a little bit, or will it be Talen Green, who transferred from Boise State and might have a leg up just because of the experience that he has playing at the highest level of the sport? So really curious about the quarterback situation, but really watching everything about Arkansas to see just how much they've progressed here in year number five, for Sam Pittman. The Florida Gators will also be on the field. And while everybody wants to talk about the offense, understandably so, I'm very curious to see who replaces Ricky Pearsall. He caught 65 passes last year for 965 yards, led the Gators, of course. The good news is they actually return 4 of their top 5 players in receiving yards here in 2024. We know Graham Mertz is back. The passing game should be good, but the big issues for Florida have resided on the defensive side of the football. You thought they got that addressed last year, possibly, but they have not been great on that side of the ball. If you look at where they were just a couple years ago, I believe it was 2019, they allowed just 15 points per game defensively. That was the 7th best in college football and the 2nd best in the SEC behind Georgia, who allowed just 12.6 that year. But since then, Florida has allowed more than 4 touchdowns per game, 28.5 points per game. That's the third worst in the SEC, in front of only Vanderbilt and Arkansas. Third worst. So when you think about that, man, the Florida Gators, they ranked 11th in the conference last year defensively. Can they get things addressed on that side of the ball? That's the biggest question for me, because everyone wants to talk about the schedule and the challenges and all these other things. Understandably, can they get better on defense? That's what I want to find out. We might get a glimpse into some of that improvement here on Saturday when they take the field in their spring game. The Georgia Bulldogs, we know Georgia's calling card, for at least for the last handful of years, has been on the defensive side of the football. They had 13 players drafted in the last two NFL drafts. Another four are likely to be drafted again this year. So we know there's been a lot of turnover on Georgia's defense. We know that. That's understandable. It hasn't really slowed them down. Last year, they finished fifth in the FBS in scoring defense, gave up just 15.7 points per game. They were ninth in total defense, just 289 yards per game, and they were great on third down. Gave up just 26% of third down opportunities. That was the lowest success rate in the FBS. But the problem is they weren't as good last year on the edges of the defense. That's what I'm most intrigued by. The edges of the defense. That's Georgia's bread and butter. Those outside linebackers, those stand-up defensive ends, those guys have been game wreckers. And that was not the case on a consistent enough basis last year. The good news is they returned three of their top five tacklers from last year. Smile Munden's back. Malachi Starks is back. CJ Allen is back. But I will be really curious to see what they're doing on the edge of the defense with Jalen Walker, Mikel Williams. Those guys are super elite, and I think they have a chance to be back and be one of the best defenses in America here again in 2024. The Kentucky Wildcats, same thing as last year, same as the year before that and the year before that. They are beginning the season with a new offensive coordinator for the fourth consecutive year. Now, Liam Cohen took over for Eddie Grant in 2021, had great success with Will Levis, went to the Rams, and then Rich Scangarello came in 2022, got fired after a disappointing year. Liam Cohen came back in 2023, kind of up and down with Devin Leary. That's putting it lightly. He takes a job at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and now they've gone to Bush Hamden, who served as Boise State's offensive coordinator and quarterback coach last year, but was at Missouri the 3 years prior. Now, the Broncos put up really big numbers last year. They were among the best in the FBS in yardage, points per game. They're also ranked at the top 10 in rushing. So there's a lot to like about what Bush Hamden has done and the track record that he has and brings to Lexington. But he's got to figure out if Brock Vandergriff is the guy. Look, it's no shame to lose a quarterback battle to Carson Beck. We know that, okay? Carson Beck is amazing. But we have seen Brock Vandergriff play a little bit. He's thrown 21 passes in his first 3 years, completed just 12, but they have gone for 165 yards and a couple touchdowns. He also has great weapons on the perimeter, and hopefully, because he won't throw the ball 1,000 miles an hour, he will allow those guys to make more plays than they made a year ago. Drops were a bit of a problem for Kentucky, but Dane Key, Barry and Brown are back. They should be in a really good spot. They also added North Texas transfer Jamori Macklin, who hauled in over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns last year for the Mean Green. Chip Trainum's back in at running back, transfer from Ohio State. So there's a lot to like about the offense there for Kentucky. Be very interested in seeing whether or not they're up to the task of improving. On Tennessee, we know what we're watching. We just talked with Josh Heupel about it. We're watching Nico Iamaleava, all right? That's all we want to see. At least that's all I want to see. We can talk a lot about the defensive backs. We can talk a lot about James Pierce. We can talk a lot about all their pieces that are back and their weapons at wideout and the fact that they really are a lot more balanced than people realize. All those things are true. But the reality is this. When you look at last year, the biggest change and what they were when they finished sixth in the country a couple years ago, going 11-2, to last year, where they lost four games, was the passing game. That was the biggest difference. They led the FBS in 526 yards a game in 2022. They were 19th in total offense in 2023. That's 448 yards per game. So they dropped 78 yards per game offensively, and they dropped 18 spots. But almost all of that drop-off was in the passing game. They went from 326 yards per game passing in 2022 to 243 yards per game last year. for those that they can't add it up really quickly, I'll do it for you. It's an 83-yard drop in yards per game from where they were in 22 to where they were in 23 all through the air. Overall, they only dropped 78 yards. They dropped 83 in passing. So Nico Iamaleava has to be the answer. The good news is he looked pretty good in the Citrus Bowl against Iowa. Makes me feel pretty optimistic about what he might be. And I know he's got great ability to create big plays, and that's what they're missing. Last year, just 39 plays that went for 25 plus yards. That's the FBS average. The year before, they had 65 plays that went for 25 plus yards. That was among the best in college football. Second most, actually, back in 2022. The LSU Tigers, I'll be watching the defense. Simple as that. There's not a whole lot more than I want to watch. We know last year the defense struggled. I know Nussmeier is going to be good. I know they're going to have great weapons. I know they're going to probably get back to running the football with a little more consistency because they don't have Jaden Daniels back there at quarterback to make them right when he drops back. I just want to watch the defense. I want to see what Blake Baker's system looks like at LSU. How will they use Harold Perkins? How is the defense backs? How are they kind of rounding into form? Because that was a group that really struggled last year. So LSU is very simple. I'm watching the defense, and I want to see growth on that side of the ball, and I think they'll have it because there's only one direction to go from where they were last year, and that is up. The Ole Miss Rebels will also be back on the field. Jackson Dart is back. Has really looked good. I mean, really looked good these last couple of years. I think he's progressed to the point where he's one of the top players at his position in the country. And some of the best players for Ole Miss are transfer players. Jackson Dart, he's thrown for over 6,000 yards and 43 touchdowns in the 2 years since transferring from USC. Trey Harris had nearly 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns last year after spending 3 years at Louisiana Tech. Ulysses Bentley rushed for 540 yards. He's now going to be the guy in the absence of Quinshon Judkins. But he transferred from SMU. He's going to be really good. The good news is, yeah, they lose Quinshon Judkins, but they added a couple of really good pieces in the portal defensively. I'll be watching those guys. I'll definitely be watching those guys in the portal, whether it's Walter Nolan or Princely Umanmielen, Trey Amos, all those guys that have transferred in to play on the defensive side. I'm very, very excited about that group. I know they're going to be great on offense. They have a bunch of guys back. Priestcorn's back. Watkins back. Trey Harris is back. And they've added Juice Wells from South Carolina, who had 928 receiving yards for the Gamecocks in 22 before missing most of last year with an injury. So a lot to look forward to this weekend. Good luck watching it all. I'm going to try. I can't wait for these spring games.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to ask all of you to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. Also want to encourage all of you to follow me on social media at Greg McElroy. You can also follow the show at Always CFB. Right now, we're doing a little giveaway. Thanks to our friends at Holderness & Bourne. You can follow them at HB Golf USA. Holderness & Bourne, if you follow me and follow them and you respond to the tweet I sent out a couple days ago, they will hook you up potentially. We're going to do a giveaway. They can hook you up potentially with some free gear. So make sure you do that. Holderness & Bourne takes great care of us here at Always College Football. So for all of us here at ACF, we have to leave you with this, a master's pick. And while part of me, you know, as a guy that's 35 years old, yeah, I really want Tiger Woods to win. I just don't see it. I will take the world number one, Scottie Scheffler. I know that's a chalky pick, so I will push him to the side for a half minute. I think he's going to win. I think he will win. He's the best player in the world, and if he can putt it, he should be in pretty good spot. But I'm going to take Will Zalatoris, the Wake Forest Demon Deacon. He's been knocking on the door the last couple years. I think it's his time to maybe knock that door down and potentially bring home his first major and a green jacket. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a terrific day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.